Today we've arrived at the centre of the mandala. We've come to spiritual receptivity. And I'm not proposing to introduce anything very new today. We've had quite a lot to take in over the last 4 days. It's always a decision to take. You have a retreat like this, and we could either just take a few little bits and just practice and practice and practice, or you get given a whole lot of things. I've got this image of you get some of those sort of supermarket prizes where they give you 10 minutes to kind of fill a trolley with anything you can get in it. So it feels like this retreat's been a bit more like that. You know, you haven't had time to sort of stop and kind of unpack anything or eat anything, but you know, hopefully you go away with quite a full trolley of things that you can enjoy, you know, over the coming days, weeks, months and years. So yes, today's more, we'll sort of see if we can just boil things down and assimilate things a little bit. So partly what I'm going to do is just go over the ground that we've covered, and I'll leave more space so we can meditate a bit more and sit a bit more. So in a way, we've been contemplating this extract from Rinchenpa's Repentance, with Bhante commenting on these four lines. Do not bestir yourself with many things, but relax and sit at ease, remembering your guru and his grace and bounties. So do not bestir yourself with many things. Bestir, so literally means to exert yourself. But I think it's also got the idea of don't stir yourself up, don't bother yourself with many things, but relax and sit at ease. And that relaxation is, as you have seen from the extract, is as deep a relaxation as we can possibly allow. It's a physical relaxation, but it's a total opening. Bhante refers to it as existential relaxation. Just sitting is existential relaxation. So we let go so much on all levels that finally we let go of selfing completely. We let go of I and me and mine, and then there's just boundless open awareness, boundless open heart, boundless open freedom. And as he says, we can't, in a funny sort of way, we can't do that. This is always the koan. You find this a lot in sort of like the Zen tradition. On one hand, you know that you need to let go, but any effort that you make to let go is further production of a self who's trying to let go. So you think, all right, I won't try to let go, but then nothing seems to happen. And you bounce between those two positions of thinking, okay, I'll just wait for the letting go to happen. And you wait a bit and it doesn't quite. So then you think, right, I'll try and push it a bit. But then that's not quite right either. And you end up kind of in a kind of not knowing what to do place. And actually you have to kind of sit with that not knowing what to do place. That is kind of a step forward in a way. But all we can do is we can notice where we're holding on. And we can do our best to let go of that. I suppose seeing it in terms of the mandala, in a way with integration, we've focused a lot on the body. So you can see, you can just notice where in the body there's holding on, where there's tension. And again, you don't force it to relax, counterproductive. You just set up the conditions. You hold that tension in a kindly awareness and see if it would like to relax. See if you can set up the conditions so that it feels happy to relax. And then going on around the mandala. You've got the whole sort of emotional side of things. So we notice emotional clenchings and emotional pain. And again, we turn towards all that. We just really sit with that. We wrap it with as much metta as we can find. And over time, hopefully, it starts to relax again in its own time, in its own way. And then we also notice where we're creating a whole kind of lot of concepts which create tension. If we find that we're, you know, there's a kind of closing down and the clenching up and the tensing, we just look, well, you know, what am I telling myself? What's the story here? Yeah. Or even deeper than that, what are the assumptions I'm making? And we just see if we can relax those, let go of those. So that's a way in which we can help to set up the conditions for this sort of existential relaxation. And then the other way to set up the conditions is to open ourselves to, or another way, is to open ourselves to Adhisthana, to open ourselves to the influence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, to open ourselves to the possibility of a Dharma Niyama way of functioning. So we do what we can to just allow this existential relaxation to happen. But we don't set it as some kind of ego goal that we have to achieve. Part of all this is relaxing not only kind of worldly ambition, so to speak, but also spiritual ambition. It's even letting go of me, the meditator, trying to get deeply into meditation, or me trying to get further down the path. So we relax and sit at ease. And it talks in terms of sitting at ease, but this is true of all the four postures, sitting, lying, standing, walking. We're not just talking about something that you do on a meditation cushion. We could say, don't bother yourself with many things, but relax and live at ease. That would be more like it. Yeah, so we could treat the whole of life as a leisure activity. Which doesn't mean that at times we don't work very strongly. It doesn't mean that we don't engage with things. But there's a certain attitude which comes with relaxation, which is also taking things with a sort of light touch. And in that way, we move more somewhere in the direction of the bodhisattva, who's said to, the bodhisattva's practice is said to be a practice of lila, of play. And this is very much moving into the greater mandala of complete uselessness. It's living in this sort of appreciative awareness, appreciating the beauty of things, not taking them for granted, just thinking how wonderful it is that they're happening at all. Again, how wonderful it is that our pen is moving across our notepad right this moment, or whatever it is. Just appreciate it. So keeping that sort of freshness, that fresh quality. And this living at ease also comes from not getting too caught up in selfing, because as we saw, selfing thrives on drama, thrives on melodrama, really. So there's a certain kind of serenity and unruffledness. We don't make a big deal out of things. We don't make a big deal out of things going wrong. We don't make a big deal out of doing things really well. There's a certain kind of, if we're not too caught up with the worldly winds, then there's a certain kind of unruffled quality to how we go through life. And something I've appreciated a lot with Bhante over the years. Talking of which, the verse goes on to say, remembering your guru and his grace and bounties. So in this little verse, it seems to me you've got the whole aspect of just sitting, just living, and you've also have the whole spiritual receptivity aspect there as well. So one aspect of your just sitting is you're open to, well, here it talks about the guru particularly, because this comes from Milarepa, who's within that Mahamudra tradition, where the guru is very, very central figure. So Milarepa's practice all, in a sense, focuses on Marpa, his teacher. But taking guru in a wider sense, well, you can take it in the narrow sense if that works for you, by all means. But take it in the sense of, yeah, remembering the deeper aspects of life, remembering the beauty of life, remembering the wisdom of life, the freedom, the peace, the love, the compassion, and being open to that. So we can live our whole life within the service of those qualities of awakening. And if we do that, that takes the pressure off ourselves. Since I've been back from long retreat, I've been talking a bit about entrusting yourself to the three jewels. We usually talk about going for refuge in terms of commitment, which really is important and emphasizes, you know, that we're not just talking about the Dharma, we're committing ourselves to transforming ourselves, to following the path. But that's, you know, when I'm really kind of committing myself, in a way I'm still on a karma niyama level. There's still me heading down the path there. So that's good, but it kind of needs balancing. It needs balancing by excuse me, an openness to the Dharma niyama way of functioning, which is beyond self and other. So spiritual receptivity involves opening ourselves to the influence, to being in the service of those powerful protectors, you know, who are guarding the universe, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, however we want to talk about that to ourselves. Yeah, so one way of talking about that is in terms of entrusting ourselves to the three jewels. And that also, again, that makes it much easier to live at ease. It's like, you know, over the years I've had various, I've been a centre chairman and a overall order convener and this and that and the other. And at times, say running a centre, I felt as if whether or not the centre went well or badly was down to me. And so I sort of felt the whole weight of the centre on my shoulders. And, you know, when it was going well, I felt, oh, you know, good, good, good. And then the next week, you know, there'd only be half the number of people at the class or whatever, and I'd feel, oh no, it's all not going well. And so I kind of carried the whole weight of the centre around with me. But then later on in my practice, I realised that, well, first I realised I wasn't that important, and I was actually quite dispensable, really, when it came to it, which is a relief. But also, by getting more into this sense of entrusting things to the three jewels, it felt like, well, you know, fundamentally I'm not doing it. Yeah, I can assist, I can put my energy into it. But yes, it isn't all down to little me. It's Mokshavadri was sort of saying it. That sort of, you know, that little bit of ourselves, that little me, isn't really up to doing these sorts of things. But yes, there is, whatever we want to call it, or not that it's even an it, but, you know, if we entrust us, the whole thing to the three jewels, if we entrust it to, you know, a suprapersonal force, or something that feels like a suprapersonal force, to be more precise, then okay, we're still there, we're still doing things. But we're kind of unruffled, we have our equanimity back. It goes well, it goes badly, okay. And we can entrust our entire lives in that kind of way. Our family, the people we care about, everything. Our whole practice. And that then does allow a relaxation and a sitting at ease. So, yeah. Don't bother yourself with many things, but relax. Eventually, even existentially relax. Relax right out of selfing altogether. And live at ease. Remembering all the qualities of enlightenment. It's also remembering all that we've been given. It's remembering with gratitude, which again involves not taking things for granted. So remembering with gratitude our teachers, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and their grace, their adhisthana and bounties. So all they've given to us. So you might like to reflect a bit on that during the day. I find it so helpful just to reflect on what I've been given. And yeah, maybe when we make an offering in the Tara Puja this evening, it could partly be an offering just of gratitude. And when I feel gratitude, then in a way I want to give back or pay it forward in some sort of way. So we could even think about how we could do that as we leave the retreat. Okay. So Bhante, in the extract, talks about letting go, sinking back. Yeah, as he talks. Yeah, just like let go. Doesn't sound very Bhante-esque somehow, but just. There have been those British Airways adverts the last few years. I sometimes catch one sort of on TV or somewhere, and at the end there's this sort of female voice which just goes, "Let yourself go." And each time I hear it at the end, I just have this sort of Mahamudra moment where I just go, "Oh yes, just let go." I don't let myself go on BA necessarily, but I just completely relax. And one thing which is a very good practice is just through the day, you know, even if you're very busy, just to take a tiny little space and just do that thing of completely letting go. One way to do it is you just kind of imagine that you're gazing into space. You're just kind of, you know, there you are sitting in a room with no windows, and you're sitting at a computer and you're on your 85th email. You just stop for a moment, and it's as if you know somewhere beyond the walls and the corridors and everything, somewhere out there, there's this vast open space, there's this vast open sky. So you just touch into that, and you just breathe out into that. And your mind actually loves to relax, and it really needs it. And I think it's quite helpful if we think more in terms of relaxing the mind. So that's one way to do it, and even just a few moments, you know, of that, if you do it regularly through the day, it does make a difference. Another way to do it is, there's an image of it's like you have some straw or something, and it's all kind of piled together, and it's tied up, so it's sort of all standing together, and it's what's holding it in place is that it's tied around the middle. And you imagine that your mind's like that, and then at a certain point the tie is just cut. So all the straw just kind of flops. It just kind of flops in every direction. So again, you can just do that. It's as if you can get into a feeling of it, then just in a moment, it's like you just let all the thinking, everything that's going on, you can use that image. It's like suddenly it just sort of, your mind just falls open. And there's a little gap, a little space. And you can just stay with that until the thinking kind of kicks back in again. Again, just doing things like that. A lot of us are sort of mentally tired a lot of the time, I think. It's because we take in such a huge diet of sort of things that we have to assimilate. It's like, you know, there's this sort of growing obesity problem in the West because people are taking in too many calories physically. And if we could sort of see what our minds kind of look like, you know, at the end of a day of sort of work and, you know, taking in information, and then we go home and we want to relax, and then we take in the news and a video, and your mind's got to assimilate all that, it's got to digest all that, it's got to process it. Making space, even if it's small, little space, is just really, really good. It's really, really helpful. It's one of the reasons why Bhante's often talked about, you know, sitting doing nothing. And I've heard him talk about this a lot over the years. And sometimes he said, well, you know, just 10 minutes a day, you know, just do nothing at all. Or sometimes it's been 20 minutes a day, just doing nothing. Or 30 minutes a day, just doing nothing. I think the longest one I heard was 3 hours a day. I can't remember who was there at the time. It was obviously a special teaching for somebody. Yeah, so that all helps us with the practice of taking our ease, you know, relaxing mind. Bhante talks about take your ease in the absolute. Well, I don't think we need to take the absolute as a noun, but yeah. Okay.